designated as riverbank, and you're asking for an exemption to that treatment.
So not for an exemption, but to allow the design commission to review
solve that issue.
A height adjustment and design review
Got
for
it.
That eastern section.
And
I want to emphasize that any height in that eastern section will still be set back from the actual river in the same way as all other buildings along the river are.
Understood. And so are you just referring to the north side, or are you referring to all of the slipway? What are you referring to?
I believe it applies to all of the slipway. There's actually code in the letter that's in front
okay.
of you
Very
proposed.
Good. Great. Okay, good.
And so it's any portion of a building that was located within 150 feet of the top of bank line on the effective date
okay.
of the code
amendment. The only reason I asked is the barge building I know is to the north northwest of that particular location. Okay, good.
Exactly.
Sorry to interrupt.
So on the other end of the barge building, the current barge building footprint is over 80,000 square feet, and a likely tenant type in the barge building may need 50,000 square feet or more of that space for an adaptive retail reuse. The current code limit on retail in the South Waterfront is 40,000 square feet, so we are asking to change the 40,000 square foot cap for permitted retail use to 50,000 square feet and to retain the current conditional use cap of 60,000 square feet. It's a modest change in the code that will facilitate the reuse of the existing iconic barge building. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Do you have any other questions?
Colleagues, any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Soren Impey, and I'm speaking on behalf of Portland Democratic Socialists of America. So I want to point out Metro's 2016 transportation snapshot. So in this document, it was reported that people of color and lower income folk are more likely to use mass transit, to walk, or to bike for transportation. In particular, people of color and low-income folk are about twice as likely to use mass transit in comparison to white people or higher-income folk. So spending hundreds of millions of dollars of the people's money on a short stretch of freeway that predominantly benefits higher-income people will only serve to perpetuate Portland's record of socioeconomic inequity when it comes to transportation spending. Portland City Council should reject the I-5 Rose Quarter Freeway Project and instead call for state funding of more urgent needs. In particular, I'd like to point out that Outer East Portland lacks sidewalks, has many unpaved residential streets, and lacks frequent and reliable mass transit connections. And I'd like to push back really quickly on the idea that half of the money is being used to fund bike, ped, and transit infrastructure. Freeway cap is about urban placemaking. Calling that a bike, ped, or transit infrastructure is akin to calling I-205 a bike facility because it has a bicycle path next to it. So I also want to point out that marginalized people in Portland, vulnerable people in Portland, are increasingly threatened by the social, by the economic, social, and environmental disruption associated with climate change. According to the Oregon Global Warming Commission, we are failing to meet our 2020 emission reduction goals, primarily due to gasoline and diesel burning motor vehicle emissions. And a few months ago, Portland City Council committed to a transition to renewable energy. So rubber stamping an unnecessary highway project that will induce increased demand for gas and diesel seems hypocritical to me. Portland DSA asked the City Council to remove the I-5 Rose Quarter Freeway Project from the Central City Plan and to prioritize basic transportation safety and livability needs of vulnerable communities and of Portland as a whole. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You'll be receiving a document here very, very soon.
Very good.
And I'm going to be requesting an amendment to the City Center 2035 plan to include further evaluation of CC Northwest 05 and 08 viewpoints from Fields Park to the Fremont Bridge. So am I...
There you go.
In addition, we have...
John, could you state your name for the record?
Oh, yes. Well, you just did, but I guess I will too. My name is John Hollister, And my presentation is actually an example of developers and the public working together. I met with Tiffany Schweitzer from Hoyt Properties, who is very, very pro-height and density, and also Stan Pinkin, president of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, who also supports density. They also support protecting valuable view corridors, demonstrated by Hoyt Properties' commitment to the Johnson Street view corridor to the train station. I request an amendment to City Center 2035 to include this that corridor you're talking about or you're looking at, and at least have staff do further due diligence of this view corridor. So, and on this first one, I've been ensured that those people there are real people and they weren't just like rendering people. And so, the Fremont Bridge is Portland's most expensive art project. And in the code, it says that the reason that Northwest 5 and Northwest 8 were not being built were because the economics there was too much economic risk. Here I'm showing compliments of Hoyt Properties, a line that I drew from the viewpoint to the edge of the of the arch, which doesn't give you a complete picture of what the view corridor is, but I used another picture where it more clearly demonstrates the view corridor, and it's the main effect is two partial buildings and a surface parking lot. So I'd like to have staff further review what that would do to be able to protect that corridor. I also will be giving a written testimony on another item with regards to the Northwest 13th Avenue Historic District that I talked about in length a while back, but I'll be providing where I feel that we should honor the Landmarks Commission's recommendation.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you for giving us this table. When I talk with staff next, I'd like to understand what's different between Northwest 5 and Northwest 8, because the language in both of them is identical.
Yeah, and I don't know either. So I just that's it. I know that one right there is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
The next three are 59 Sarah Iannarone, 67 Joshua Pesos, and 68 Douglas R. Allen. And they'll be followed by 70, Cliff Weber, 73, David Bouchard, and 74, Mary Vogel.
Good afternoon, Sarah. Do you want to start?
Sure.
Thank you.
Apologies for being a little late. I was out with a delegation from Australia teaching them how to build their first light rail line, ironically. So first off, thanks for having me here. As a comprehensive plan advisory committee member, I witnessed dedicated staff and hundreds of community members committing thousands of hours to this process, and I want to thank and commend them. Overall, this plan is a remarkable product. As a city, we should be proud of our world-class planning bureau and the civic capacity that we've created around that. That said, there's one part of this plan that I find untenable, and that is the proposed $450 million widening of I-5 through our central city, the single largest infrastructure investment in this plan. You're going to hear from others here today why this proposed freeway widening project is counterproductive to our express goals as a city and region. They'll explain how it will have little to no impact on our congestion woes or epidemic of traffic fatalities. And the planners will talk about induced demand. Community advocates will explain how it runs counter to our equity and climate action plans. So I can't really add anything to that. So I'm not here as a planner, a cyclist, a pedestrian, or even an East Portlander. I'm here as someone whose job it is to share the Portland story with cities from around the globe and to pull you out to a 30,000-foot perspective and remind you that whether we like it or not, our city is a model for the world. Hundreds of city leaders come through my program at Portland State every year to learn what's so special about our place. They come to hear about our policies and best practices, and they come here to learn how they can be more like us and have the outcomes that we've achieved. There's a story I share with nearly every one of them that begins, "What's so special about Portland?" Then I explain it wasn't microbreweries and DIY culture, neighborhood associations or climate action plans, premier urban design, or even transit investments that made this place great. The secret to our success was seeded 40 years ago from an intentional change in direction away from auto-centric sprawl through the passage of Senate Bill 100, the UGB, and formation of our regional government. Indeed, our successes today are based on intentional choices that we made four decades ago to resist the status quo and build places that work for people foremost rather than automobiles. I then take them on bicycles from Portland State over the Hawthorne Bridge to OMSI, where I stop beneath a dead-end overpass, look up, and show them this is what it looks like literally when you stop building highways. I implore you, please do not deviate from this path. It looks horrible for our city to even think about investing money in freeways when the globe is on fire, literally. Do you want your legacy to be that you voted yes to widen freeways after 40 years of resisting freeway expansion, after our legacy is built on resisting freeway expansion? Please, let's follow the advice of the advocates and invest this money more wisely in things that will help keep people on feet, on transit, and on their bicycles. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Joshua Pazos. I was born in San Francisco and studied mechanical engineering and worked in that field for a little bit. And now I'm going back to school, and I'm at University of Oregon, and we just did a study of the Green Loop and further of what could be generated from the Green Loop. And I was very excited about this. I'm going just back to school in architecture and urban design. I was very excited about the Green Loop because it provided kind of a vision of hope and a future of new multimodal transportations, and also, you know, a path for these to be created. With the highway expansion and the rest of the bill, it kind of provides a vision of destruction of our planet and the corruption that comes with it. I would say even if 90% of that bill went towards bikes and fixing the roads, that it was not worth that message. But further, I did the study in the industrial sanctuary, the Central East Side, seeing what the Green Loop could do and what could be generated from the, from that in that neighborhood, specifically Salmon. And so there's kind of there's a bunch of different things, but there was three things that really stood out in kind of streets for the public. So when I studied in Italy, you know, it was amazing to see that a street could be 10 different things in one day just by people moving on and off. Technical nutrients from cradle to cradle. So there's a rent-a-solvent. And so these types of businesses can help the industrial sanctuary help the industrial sanctuary strengthen and create more Portland-centric businesses. So rent-a-solvent leases out a solvent. The company uses it. They take it back, and then they separate the solvent and reuse the solvent. So it's also kind of a green. So it was, incentivizing stuff for that could help help the industrial sanctuary grow. And then streets as a way of cleaning. So, I mean, obviously we have the, I'm forgetting the name of them, but, you know, you put plants in there and the plants naturally clean the streets. And there's many different ways. So these three things put together could be utilized to help strengthen that industrial sanctuary. And then further, Salmon is very kind of a, Salmon Street on the east side is a very special street that has access to the river right there. And so the Green Loop could generate like people, you know, moving from the Green Loop down to the riverfront. And so this is part of what the Green Loop could help.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon.
My name is Doug Allen. I want to second all of the comments made by Portland Audubon, and I'd like to focus my comments on the Rose Quarter project. First of all, I think we really should thank Representative McLean for pushing for getting value pricing, as they call it, congestion pricing, put into HB 2017. But I really must call out the fact that this Rose Quarter project is based on a number of false narratives that had been put forth. And I was particularly sorry to hear Representative McLean put forth the false narrative regarding pollution from congestion. There is, as far as I know, no research other than basically bad science research that restricts itself purely to a project area that shows the reduced global warming emissions or congestion, global warming emissions or pollution by lowering congestion. Whereas there's lots of research that shows when you look at the entire travel shed that anytime you attempt to reduce congestion, you encourage more travel, and that does produce, in fact, more pollution and more global warming emissions. And I think that point needs to be examined because it keeps coming forth that this isn't going to reduce pollution, but no, it doesn't. I was going to jump on Commissioner Novick because he was the JPAC representative that kind of allowed this to happen, to get to this stage. I mean, I know it's been going on since 2012, and I've been involved. I testified before the steering committee then, and I testified at the legislature about 2017. And I know Bernie Bottomley at TriMet has been pushing this thing forward. But it basically comes down to cost effectiveness. That this, if we really, I can't believe that you would spend $250 million. Okay. Sorry, I guess my time has run out.
Thank you. Appreciate all three of your testimony. Thanks, sir.
The next three are Cliff Weber, David Bouchard, and Mary Vogel. And they'll be followed by 76, Peggy Moretti, 82, Ted Buehler, and 83, Elizabeth Hart Morris.
Carla, how will I access my slides?
Yeah, hold on just a second.
Carla is our resident technological genius.
The others can go. I was the last.
All right, sir, why don't you go ahead and start while Carla's sorting out the other speaker's presentation.
Okay. My name is David Bouchard, and first of all, I want to say that nowhere has freeway expansion ultimately solved congestion. And I want to speak to someone who moved here about 2 years ago now, almost 2 years ago from Baltimore. And I was like many people who came out to visit Portland, and you know, I fell in love for it. And you know, because I wanted to be in a city that I felt, you know, prioritizes human, people-centric transportation, not cars. You know, a city that has a reliable, functional transportation system, less congestion than I was used to on the East Coast. And that's why Portland attracted me. And I think that's why Portland attracts a lot of people who come from cities that are just choked with congestion. You know, it's from cities with some of the highest congestion in the country who have massive, you know, 10, 20-lane freeways. And that means, to me, that shows me that when you add more capacity on freeways of any kind, even if it's just a little bit, that induces more driving because you have drivers who are like, oh, yeah, you know, the traffic isn't so bad. I can go out and drive. And then, you know, then everyone's doing it. And then you've got the same problem that you started with, and now you've got to spend another $450 million to add more lanes. And now, and for the same reasons. So you really need to take a second look at this. Ask yourselves these questions. Where are the people from the public coming out to support this? All the people who've come out to support it are either ODOT, who are twisting your arm into doing this because they're telling you that, oh, well, if you don't support this project, we're not going to give you the money, so you might as well just go ahead and support it because it's not that big of a deal. It's not all that much, and we're going to add a few bells and whistles to it for the bikes, but they're twisting your arm, and you need to ask yourself, is that a right? Is that a good thing? Is that an honorable thing for a partner to do? And you guys are partners in this. And really, yes, ask yourself, where are the people from the public who are supporting this? I haven't seen one yet, just people from various government departments and committees. Also, ask yourself, what are the alternatives to freeway congestion? One of the biggest factors of congestion are all the cars, all the personal cars. Not so much, there are a lot of trucks, but if there were fewer cars, you would have less congestion. So look at other transit options. Some of those options that were, or better bus service, or were a couple of things that were mentioned earlier in the testimony about congestion on Williams and Widler. Those areas could have better bus service. We need more nighttime service. We need to get people to choose to take transit or to use other modes and get our freeway capacity down to what it was originally designed for. And that way, we will be known as, the Portland that people flock to. That's what we want to be.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, and a shout-out for your shirt. I like that one.
Thank you.
If you can't see it, it's the chemical components of caffeine.
I could use some of that right now.
Good afternoon.
My name is Cliff Weber. I live in a condo in Collins Circle.
Thank you.
To invoke a word that was heard in this chamber for the first time last week, I would like to talk about the palimpsest that is gradually yielding two lost works of Archimedes. But instead, I'm here to talk about view corridors. After recommending the notorious rezoning of Block 7, the Planning Commission is now threatening further damage to the Goose Hollow neighborhood. It is proposed that the status of Southwest Jefferson Street be changed from a view corridor to a view street. The change in nomenclature is small, but the effect on the ground is huge. To see the arch, a person would now have to stand in the middle of the street, directly beneath the bridge. It is said that council wishes to raise Portland's profile. High-profile cities have scenic assets that they protect without compromise. Tall buildings don't obstruct views of the Eiffel Tower or of the Roman Colosseum, and they never will. These urban icons are sacrosanct, and so should Portland's be. There is still plenty of real estate left to accommodate tall buildings without having to destroy the view corridors that keep Portland's scenic icons clearly open to view. These views have been enshrined in the zoning code for decades and for good reason. If they are obliterated, outsiders in future years will look upon Portland as just another congested American city, and locals will wonder where the Vista Bridge ever got its name. The current disaster in the Columbia River Gorge only serves to remind us that scenic assets are fragile and irreplaceable once they are gone. As a resident of Goose Hollow for the past 10 years, I urge council to honor the stewardship of past generations of public-spirited citizens by continuing to protect and to preserve the view corridor that Southwest Jefferson Street has always been for the past quarter century.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Mary Vogel, owner of Plan Green in downtown's West End. I've been involved in this process since the beginning, about 7 years now. The plan does nothing to address the surface parking lot owners in downtown's West End who have held the city and its residents hostage for at least 20 years with their treeless asphalt deserts taking up whole faces of city blocks. In 105 degrees and smoky, these asphalt deserts are as much as 10 degrees hotter, making my walk to and from, for example, the Pearl, nearly unbearable. And I climb mountains on weekends. What about my low-income neighbors with canes and walkers? Another view of that same parking lot. Please amend Volume 5 implementation with these items. One, incentivize immediate interim redevelopment of existing surface parking lots into parking forest with street trees on all sides, achieving stormwater management and multiple health benefits while awaiting full redevelopment. Two, tax land that is used at less than maximum productivity, such as surface parking lots, at its development potential to be reduced if the parking forest is installed. And three, if the other two don't work, plant and maintain trees along all sides of all downtown surface parking lots and bill the property owners for planting and maintenance. And then I'd also like to address Volume 2B, the Transportation System Plan. I'd like to see a change in the bikeways for Southwest Columbia, Southwest Jefferson, Southwest 12th Avenues from bikeways to greenways to better accommodate not only cyclists like myself, but also pedestrians, wildlife, and to mitigate the effects of climate change. It's just not fair to the rest of us that even in this era of climate chaos, these owners help destroy our air and water quality, not to mention temperature and aesthetic quality. It's well past time for them to change. And EcoTrust is one great example of a parking lot that manages all stormwater on site and is an asset to the community. Shouldn't other redeveloped parking lots be fun places to hold events too? Was that my time? Okay. So in any case, I mean, you know, this can be done. We can have parking lots and great public spaces too. I have other
I know you sent this in by email as well, Mary.
I-405 impact strategy and all that I've already sent in.
Those are great examples. I did see your email.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is also helpful to have the slide presentation. Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Appreciate your testimony.
Parking forest. I'm going to add that to my list.
Maybe done.
I can claim the naming
rights. The next three are Peggy Moretti, Ted Bueller, and Elizabeth Hart Morris. And they'll be followed by 86, 87, 88, Dan Yates, Madeline Kovacs, and Doug Klotz.
Why don't you go ahead and start since you're there.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Thanks for being here today. My name is Ted Bueller. I'm a volunteer with the group Bike Loud PDX. We're speaking on behalf of better bikeways in the city of Portland and of good transportation allocation of funds. We're an all-volunteer group, and we haven't had paid staff to come out and speak and talk about lots of things, but we like to come whenever we can, and thank you for hearing us. I have a document here, which perhaps you all have seen. This is the Portland Bicycle Master Plan for 2030. It was adopted in 2010, and I came and spoke in favor of it, and Commissioners Saltzman and Fritz were here. And one of the things I said is, you know, this is only a $250 million document. It's not really going to cost all that much to build. I think you should also ask your staffers to find out how much it would cost if you fail to reach the targets in here to build more roadways for the resulting car traffic if the growth in employment is not absorbed by the growing numbers of bicycles. And it's all part of the Portland story. If you look at the yellow line here, this is the growth in bicycle ridership from 1999 to 2008. And from 2008 to 2016, it's been flat. And the reason that, you know, there's a lot of cars on the freeway is not because the Portland model has not been successful. It's not because it was a bad idea. It's not because this wasn't a good plan. It's because this was not funded. But bicycle funding and transit funding hit a big drop in 2010 to 2014. City Council, you folks, you know, were not quite as excited about it as you were the previous 10 years. In the last 3 years, you've been more excited about it. I'm very happy about that. I would encourage you guys to also take a look before, you know, you want to ask a lot of important questions before dropping half a billion dollars. And if you take out your iPhones, you can pull up traffic. And you can see that on a day like today, every single freeway in the whole city is red. And it's just not a very smart business decision to widen one section of freeway when for the same amount of money, you could absorb all of the additional traffic and keep everybody's constituents in Medford happy too, because you would solve lots of transportation problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, again, I'm Peggy Moretti. I am here representing Restore Oregon, and I'm going to speak to some of the height issues that are contained in the comprehensive plan. We're all trying to figure out how we keep Portland, Portland, and how do we embrace that need to grow and the need to retain the unique, authentic sense of place that gives Portland its very identity. And we would think that the answer includes striking a balance that would both that also protects the integrity of our historic assets. Restore Oregon has been actively engaged in the 2035 plan for over 2 years now, and in every community meeting that we attended, the most frequent public input by far was that we must retain the character and historic fabric that creates our authentic sense of place. So therefore, the proposed height reductions and the removal of the bonus height opportunities must be approved as proposed for the Northwest 13th Avenue, Grand Avenue, Irvington, and New Chinatown, Japantown historic districts. These districts total up to a minuscule amount of land in this city, but they embody a giant share of our collective history. To protect the integrity of our historic districts, the new development within those districts must be compatible. To leave the permitted heights where they are puts the Historic Landmarks Commission in an impossible situation, ensuring frustration and confusion because you simply cannot build compatible infill at 300 or 400 feet next to a two- or three-story historic building. Despite what some may claim, it is particularly essential you approve the proposed height reductions in Chinatown, Japantown, Portland's only historic district, as we heard earlier, that's designated for its ethnic history. There are many things to like and support in the new plan, and we appreciate the opportunities Restore Oregon has had to participate in shaping it. We especially applaud the historic FAR transfer because we need every incentive possible to attract investment in building rehabilitation and reuse, and we look forward to working with City Council to identify additional incentives in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Morassi, have you sent that in? I
will give you a copy today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, Commissioners, Mr. Mayor. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony. I'm Elizabeth Hart Morris. I'm with the Green Roof Info Think Tank. I'm their executive director, also known as GRIT. And I'm also a subject matter expert for commercial roofing and commercial green roof development. So GRIT is fully supportive of the CC 2035 eco-roof requirement with Commissioner Udaly's amendment. But we'd like to offer the following suggestions to strengthen the requirement. I've got some photos here that you can see and a little other information that I did submit online as well. So, in light of Commissioner Udaly's amendment, we're fully supportive of it, and we all of expanding the green roof coverage to 100% parapet to parapet of every qualified roof. We are also supportive of amenity space for people to be able to use the roof and to be able to interact with the green roof, and that is part of the Central City Plan, is to be able to interact with nature for people. And so, but what we would like to do is propose a strong definition of what amenity space actually is, so that it's not used as a loophole to get around the green roof requirement. And so, first of all, amenity space would be fully accessible to building occupants. So that means it has to have the proper structural weight capacity. It has to have the proper ADA access, the stairwells, the doors, the parapet walls, the guardrails, everything that would make it an amenity space. Number two, no exposed roof membrane. So it's not an amenity space if you're walking on the waterproofing membrane. It's actually a patio flooring with pavers. Many examples all over Portland of green roofs with amenity space. And number three, no more than 40% of the amenity space would cover the roof, and the rest of it would be green roofing. So that's for the amenity space. For the change, also we suggest changing the threshold at which the requirement applies from 20,000 square feet down to 5,000 square feet, because Portland's a city of modestly sized buildings. The current threshold of 20,000 square feet will significantly reduce the coverage of green roofing and also remove the solar exemption. There's no need for a solar exemption. Green roofs are compatible with solar panels. In fact, they function much more efficiently when solar panels are placed over a green roof. Several pictures in there will show you that, the number of different buildings that have the two together. And we thank you for the opportunity to provide comments, and we would like to offer to provide a tour for many of these different types of green roofs over the next few weeks for everybody. GRIT provides tons of tours. We work with the city very closely, with the universities and with other nonprofits. We'd be happy to show you how this is already working in Portland. So thank you.
So if you could please send in your comments on the definition of amenities. I don't see that in your letter.
Yes, no, I just made that change, so I will update that and resubmit it.
Thank you very much.
And I'll just take a moment to say that we are looking at all of these suggestions. We certainly don't want to eliminate the possibility of rooftop amenities, but our priority remains to have as much of the roof covered in vegetation as possible. So thanks Please. For giving that testimony and giving me an opportunity to clarify our position.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. I had the privilege of looking out on one of these examples, and I had the privilege of helping to build the other. So thanks for using them as examples.
Great.
Next three, please.
Are Dan Yates, Madeline Kovacs, and Doug Klotz. And they'll be followed by 89, 90, 91, and we're going to go with 92. Renee France, Adela Maza, Felicia Huggins, and David Noren.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. If I go out of order because I'm sitting down, is that...
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right. Just to speed things along. Dear Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Madeline Kovacs, and I'm the coordinator for the Portland for Everyone Coalition. We ask that council, we support the Central City 2035 plan, and specifically we ask that council adopt the height and FAR maps as recommended by the Planning and Sustainability Commission. The plan strikes a good balance, upzoning in some places and downzoning in others, as you all heard at your work session and some other times. We are especially supportive of slight FAR creases made in the Pearl and River Place in order to ensure that more projects will participate in the inclusionary housing program. Increasing allowed heights above base allowances only by provision of identified public benefits, and making affordable housing the only bonus available everywhere, and bonuses and transfers that will preserve and upgrade historic resources without reducing much needing housing in the central city. We also encourage council to try and avoid situations where, in a word, good plans die deaths by 1,000 paper cuts. We urge the city to ensure that future design review and other land use review processes don't include reductions in entitlements given by long-range planning and zoning, and therefore reduction in the number of homes and affordable homes the city has planned for in well-connected areas. We ask that the city ensure that the Central City Plan is implemented, not undermined by one commission that is not responsible for considering citywide and regional goals and needs. We also want to strengthen incentives that prioritize building affordable homes on site rather than pay in lieu. I want to conclude by reminding council that Portland is in a declared housing crisis, but we did not get here overnight. Part of the solution is strengthening tenants' rights, part of the solution is securing more funding for affordable housing, and part of the solution is allowing enough housing of many different kinds to be built. Supports our comp plan goals, our climate goals, and our sustainability goals. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. Why don't you go next?
Dan Yates. I want to thank Troy Doss for his team for doing such a terrific job on leading the 2035 process in the Southeast Quadrant. I do have a few comments to improve the current draft, and due to time limitations, I will summarize my concerns and provide you with written testimony that goes into greater detail. I am pleased that this document has started the process to return water transportation to the Willamette River. I am concerned that we are being short-sighted and restricting the maximum of 5,000 square foot footprint for a marine terminal. I would like to see that restriction removed and let the needs of the facility determine the facility size. I'm concerned that the 2035 draft continues to fail to follow State Goal 15 and multiple Ninth Circuit Court and Supreme Court rulings related to the City of Portland Greenway Code. I'm concerned that the draft continues to attempt to place a setback on property that has water-dependent or water-related uses. Goal 15 on page 4, paragraph K, is black letter in stating that there will be no setback for those uses. I'm concerned that this document attempts to treat water-dependent and water-related uses differently relating to Goal 15 and zoning. I'm concerned that this draft removed all mention of the Marine Transportation Security Act of 2002. Previous drafts had wording to provide some flexibility to the proposed code, and that original wording needs to be returned. The City of Portland must allow marine operations to comply with federally mandated security plans. A flexibility is a must. Mapping issues continue to be an issue with every draft of the 2035 plan. The waterfront is a challenging environment to draw lines for code. In reference to our property, it continues to be an issue. For example, it continues to show our office building and parking lot as high-value environmental resources. I am concerned that the E River overlay does not reflect State Planning Goal 5 ESE analysis, as it does not distinguish between activities depending on whether the resource is ranked high or medium. They are treated the same. I am concerned the city is attempting to regulate dredging in an area it has no expertise in and that has been professionally managed by the Army Corps with its joint permit process for decades. Surely the city has more pressing needs than to spend scarce resources staffing up on a redundant process that works really well. Thank you for your time.
Dan, could I ask you a question? We had some testimony a number of people ago related to the Zidell yards, and they had suggested flexibility in a slightly different context. I don't know if they were declaring water dependency or not. I think they were not. But what they'd asked for was access to a design review process or some other flexible process related to their specific needs with their now historic spillway. Would something like that work? Is there a framework similar to that that might work in terms of providing that flexibility? What were you proposing?
I'm a member of the Working Waterfront Coalition, and the North Reach, which was bogged down and still is bogged down, the Central Reach has been referred to as the blueprint for moving back to the North Reach. I can guarantee you it will end up in court. I have personally spent well over $1 million defeating the city building my docks over the years because the city refuses to update its code. And when it has an opportunity to, which we have provided extensive legal analysis, and I don't expect the city attorney to be an expert in this very small niche because they're generalists, but the land use attorneys in the city are experts in it. And the city code is still completely out of line. And I just cannot emphasize it enough that there's very few of us it impacts. In the way of property owners, there's very few private property owners left on the waterfront, but we do know the rights, and I'm just trying to avoid going back into court the next time I want to take a permit out to do something on the river. It happens every time.
Very good. I appreciate your testimony, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. I appreciate the packet. Did you include the summary of what you just said?
I included it for her.
Okay, great. Yeah. I'll get it because the multi-page document. It seemed like you had really honed in on the things that you thought were most important, and I appreciate that.
I can give you my copy as I walk out. How's that?
That would be lovely. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, my name is Doug Klotz. No urban freeway expansion has ever solved congestion, just to put that out there. I asked you to remove the Rose Quarter freeway expansion from the Central City Plan. Now, I'm a co-founder of Oregon Walks, and I also served on the Northeast Quadrant Committee that came up with the Rose Quarter plan. ODOT told us then that the crashes on I-5 were the reason that this freeway needed to be rebuilt and the driving force for the whole thing. Since then, the City of Portland has adopted Vision Zero. Here's the draft plan. And the object of Vision Zero is to reduce and eliminate deaths and major injuries from traffic. And we now learn that most of the Rose Quarter crashes are minor crashes. I mean, we just heard that there were two deaths there, and that's tragic again. However, if you look at the map in the Vision Zero document, there are hundreds of fatalities in the city. I counted like 25 of them on 82nd alone. this is just, it's a misallocation of resources. The 82nd, Lombard, the other arterials in the city, those are where the deaths and serious injuries are, the majority of them are happening, not on the freeways. This project is spending $500 million in the wrong place, and it won't solve congestion either because of induced demand, as we've heard. So I take Commissioner Saltzman's advice, and let's try congestion pricing first. I want to cover a few other things. On the West End, I'm puzzled with everyone talking about this as if this is a new thing. The West End plan basically leaves all the heights as they are. The 250-foot, the 325-foot, they're the same as they've been for 17 years. This is nothing new. And we need those heights and FAR amounts to get more people living in the central city where their carbon footprint is lower. And we should hold with those recommendations of the panel, regardless of how they got there.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you, for your testimony. Next three, please.
I think we'll go with just Renee France right now, and then I have a group of four that need to come up together.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's going to be mighty lonely up here. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. My name is Renee France. I am here this afternoon on behalf of the Irving Hotel Investors LLC, who have a property interest in the site located at 1202 Northwest Irving Street in the Pearl District. I provided written comments that is consistent with this testimony, requesting a modest increase in the Central City Plan District FAR in the Pearl area north of Hoyt Street. The Irving Street property is just north of Hoyt Street, and the current FAR on the site and much of the surrounding property to the north and to the east is currently 4-1 FAR. Under the recommended plan, the FAR in that area would increase to 5-1. We support the recommendation to increase the FAR allowance in the Pearl District north of Hoyt Street and commend the planning efforts that recognize that that increase is needed in order to satisfy the city's goals. However, the proposed 5-1 FAR is still one of the lowest FARs in the central city for similarly situated properties. An increase of 6-1 would be more consistent with the city's density goals, would create closer alignment between the FAR and the base and bonus heights in that area, which range from 250 feet to over 400 feet. It would also create greater parity across the Pearl area. For example, the FAR on sites directly south of Hoyt Street have a 6-1 FAR, yet the area south of Hoyt Street has maximum bonus heights that are either equal to or lower to the areas north of Hoyt Street. Even with a 6-1 FAR, most sites would need an FAR bonus or transfer to develop the maximum heights, and therefore the requested change would not diminish the applicability or the effectiveness of the new affordable housing or historic resource priorities for FAR bonuses and transfers. For these reasons, we respectfully request that the Council implement the recommended FAR increase in the relevant Pearl area north of Hoyt Street, but implement a ratio of 6-1 in place of the recommended 5-1 ratio.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay. And the next group are Adela Maza, and she's coming with a translator, Felisa Hagen, and David Noren. And they'll be followed by Deanna Mueller Crispin, Corey Poole, and Joss Hetrick, 95, 96, and 97.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Lisa Higgins. I'm a lobbyist for the janitors and healthcare workers that were talked about earlier and the other 13,000 members of SEIU Local 49. Before I kick off my testimony, I'd actually like to request that Adela's testimony, who's going to happen after me, if we could, I'd like to request a doubling of her time to allow for translation.
We always do. We don't count translator time.
Great. Thank you. On behalf of our members, I'm here to urge the City Council to amend the draft city plan that is before you today to include language in the proposed code consistent with the equity provisions of Policy 3.3D of the Comprehensive Plan adopted last year. SEIU Local 49 feels that not only did the council do an incredible job, the Bureau of Planning and other folks who were involved in expanding that 3.3D section and including equity and inclusion in some of the work moving forward, we also feel like it laid a foundation to have a discussion about good jobs. We know that now we live in the most inequitable time when it comes to economic disparities in the history of our country. That includes the time of the Great Depression. We urge the council to take amendments into consideration that in every aspect that the council is doing and setting its planning for the future to reduce those inequities and disparities. The comprehensive plan to push for the greater equity mechanism in the policy 3.3D mandates the city to incorporate requirements into the zoning code to provide public and community benefits as a condition for development projects to receive increased development allowances. We have joined with many of you to work on housing for the last 4 years. We've also been working on this issue for the last 4 years, and we'd like to talk about the transfer FAR, which is above the bonus FAR in the housing after the housing allowances. We have our attorney, David Noren, who will come up and outline what the proposal is. Because we believe the current draft code doesn't go far enough, and you have the opportunity to do something greater. I really appreciate your time today. I'm happy to answer questions now. I'm also happy to answer questions at a later date. I know that you have a lot of before you, and I'd like you to hear from Adela before we jump into questions.
And you are going to give us the written suggestions for how to change the policy?
And we're going to give you written suggestions for how to change the policy, an infographic on how the policy should be changed, and many other materials you can read at your leisure.
Fabulous. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you.
Buenas tardes, alcalde Piller y consejeros. Me llamo Adela Maza. Soy miembro de SEIU Local 49. Soy inmigrante de Guatemala. Hace más de 30 años que me mudé a Portland en busca de una vida mejor.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Adela Maza. I'm a member of SEIU Local 49. I'm an immigrant from Guatemala, and I moved to Portland over 30 years ago for a better life.
Tengo dos trabajos de tiempo completo en el centro de Portland. En la mañana trabajo en los desayunos en el hotel y en la tarde trabajo en la ADM limpiando edificios en el Standard Plaza.
I work two full-time jobs in downtown Portland. In the morning, I work at a downtown hotel helping with the morning breakfast. At night, I work as a janitor for ABM building maintenance, cleaning the Standard Plaza.
Hoy vivo en Gresham, pero antes vivía en la Hawthorne y la 15. Pero aunque tenía dos trabajos, no me era posible pagar la renta para seguir viviendo allí. Me mudé a Gresham porque es un lugar más barato y sé que la mayoría de mis compañeros de trabajo en el hotel y los janitors tampoco pueden vivir en el centro de Portland. Ahí tienen que vivir cada vez más lejos y viajar para el centro de Portland viviendo en Hillsborough, en Aloha y en Horse Grove.
I live in Gresham. I used to live closer to Portland, near 15th and Hawthorne, but even working two jobs, I could not afford to live there anymore. I moved out to Gresham because it's a more affordable place to live. I know that most of my coworkers at the hotel and at my building can't afford to live in downtown Portland either. Like me, they have to live further and further away, commuting from places like Gresham, Hillsborough, and Aloha.
Los janitors que, como yo, ganan el sueldo aproximadamente de $3.75 la hora porque tenemos un contrato de unión. Los trabajadores de limpieza sin unión suelen ganar $2 menos la hora. Yo trabajo y sostengo mis nietos y mi hija, y aún con mi sueldo tengo que hacer decisiones difíciles, eligiendo entre pagar la renta, comprar mi comida, comprar útiles para la escuela de los niños.
Janitors like myself who work in downtown make about $13.75 per hour because of our union contract. Non-union janitors often make up $2 less per hour than I do. I support myself, my daughter, and my grandchildren. Even on my wages, I have to make tough decisions about paying rent, paying for groceries, and buying school supplies for my grandkids.
Mis compañeros de trabajo y yo hemos luchado por las condiciones de los janitores y los trabajadores de seguridad. Para que sean justos, muchos edificios nuevos en la ciudad me preocupa a los trabajadores en esos edificios, compañeros de trabajo y también las familias que no sean afectadas por los sueldos bajos en los nuevos contratos de los edificios sean peores estándares en para todos nosotros.
My coworker and I have fought hard to raise standards for the people who clean and secure the office buildings downtown. Today, I see so many new buildings. I worry about the workers in those new buildings, and I worry how my coworkers and my family will be affected if low wages and new buildings lead to lower standards for all of us.
Necesitamos una ciudad justa y equitativa para todos, no solamente para los afortunados. Buscamos el apoyo del Consejo de la Ciudad para ayudarnos a construir una ciudad donde la gente tenga acceso a trabajos buenos, que paguen sueldos justos, con beneficios. Podemos utilizar la ley para crear un lugar mejor para todos.
We need a city that's fair and equitable for everyone, not just for the fortunate. We look to the City Council to help us build a city where people have access to good jobs that provide adequate wages and benefits. We can use the law to make a better place for all of us.
El centro de Portland no debe ser solamente para los ricos. Yo pido en nombre de las familias trabajadoras a través de Portland que la ciudad de Portland adopte normas que protejan las familias de los trabajadores. Gracias.
Portland should not just be for wealthy people. I'm asking on behalf of working families throughout Portland that the City of Portland adopt policies that protect working families. Thank you.
Thank you.
Adela actually has to leave to go to work, just for the record.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thank you for the translation. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Councilors. My name's David Knorr, and I'm a lawyer representing SEIU Local 49. We've just provided you another copy of my letter of September 1st that has some very specific proposed code amendments to address our proposal. We've been bringing this issue before you for a couple of years, increasingly kind of narrowing our focus on it, and I hope that at this point we're emphasizing the goals that you have set out to enhance affordable housing and to, as you set out in your comp plan, make sure that when we have increased development allowances that there's some public benefit or public good. Our concern has been that the proposed draft of this Central City update and the recommended draft both sort of give a pass to transfers of FAR. There's no requirement that transfers provide that public benefit. Before you can get to a transfer, it's true that you have to have a bonus, 3-to-1 bonus FAR that you can earn by a fee in lieu if you're a commercial building before you can get to transfers. But that bonus is itself your benefit. So when that's the increased development allowance. So in order to be consistent with the comprehensive plan provision, you really need to have some additional public benefit there. And what we've suggested in our proposed amendments is a mechanism that will support affordable housing or historical buildings, one or the other, in a couple of different ways. One is that you can do transfers to a commercial development, a larger development, from a project that has on-site housing, and you don't have to do any additional FAR or any additional public benefit. Or the same for historic. But if you bring FAR in from some other site, then you need to provide some additional public benefit. And what we propose is that you make sure that the workers who service that development after it's completed and occupied have good jobs. And we've provided a new definition of that that's tied to 50% of MFI for the area. And it will, as our documentation has shown, help assure that the folks who work in these developments at least have a shot at being able to afford housing.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. And I look forward to reading the document. Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Deanna Mueller-Crispin, Corey Poole, and Josh Hetrick. And they'll be followed by 99, Lawrence Kumar, 102, Kevin Johnson, and maybe Aaron Jones, and 104, Keel Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You can go ahead and start.
My name is Josh Hetrick. Whenever I hear about another proposed urban highway project, and there always seems to be another, I'm reminded of my experience as a resident of Boston. The Big Dig was a massive project which, like this one, promised surface street enhancements, public transportation improvements, and other environmental mitigations in exchange for a central city highway reconfiguration. The highway portion of the project came first, as always, and of course, it went drastically over its budget of time and money. As a result, many of the proposed mitigations have been and continue to be delayed, watered down, and outright canceled. Many years and billions upon billions of dollars later, we're right to question projects such as these. The modest improvements to travel times were quickly and predictably eclipsed by induced demand, countering a central justification for the entire project. When so many mitigations have to be proposed, let alone completed, we are right to give pause and consider the inherent and disproportionately negative impacts of urban highway infrastructure. And we are right to be skeptical of plans that promise enormous sums of money, spend enormous sums of money on highways now in exchange for trade-offs that may not come. Rather than building an ever taller ladder to get us out of the hole we're digging, better that we simply stop digging and start building things that make sense. Please remove the I-5 Rose Quarter Freeway Expansion Project from the Central City Plan and focus instead on projects that truly advance our safety, equity, and environmental goals.
Thank you.